Toshma. Okay. So we left off yesterday. We began to discuss the major historical event that took place in Tzfat in the 1500s. So the background of the event was the words of the Rambam, the Rambam of the Sanhedrin, who entertains the possibility of reinstituting smicha. So from the days of the Rambam until the 1500s, nobody thought of doing it. But came the Rabbanim in Tzfat in the 1500s and said there was a really established Jewish community. They decided, you know what, Higi Hazman, it's time to implement the words of the Rambam. And the Rabbanim in Tzfat got together and they decided who should be the Reish HaSanhedrin, so to speak. So the greatest Talmid Chacham at the time was a man by the name of Yaakov Bei Rav. So just to give you an idea of him, in case you never heard of Yaakov Bei Rav, Mahari Bei Rav, he was the Rebbe of the Beis Yosef. Okay? Now, let's not forget the Beis Yosef didn't come to Tzvas until later in his life, until he had already finished writing the Beis Yosef. And the Beis Yosef was written in Turkey and the Shulchan Aruch was written in Tzvas. So I don't know exactly what year the Beis Yosef came to Tzvas, but you've got to be talking about he must have been his 30s or 40s by the time he came to Tzvas, maybe older, I don't know for sure. He arrives in Tzvas and he finds a Rebbe, and his Rebbe is Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav. So imagine the Shulchan Aruch at the age of 40 or 50 is calling Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav his Rebbe, giving an idea who this Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav was. So Rabbi Yaakov Bei Rav was appointed as the Nasi, the head of this whole group, and he in turn granted smicha to several of the Talmid Chacham at the time. One of them, of course, is Talmid Lubav Rabbi Yosef Karo. Then he gave smicha to Moshe Kotever, if I'm not mistaken, who was a big mekubal in Tzfat, and then to Rosh Alshech, I think, was part of that chabur also. I don't know whether Rosh Shlomo Kabbas also, I don't remember exactly who the other ones were. I think there were five altogether who received smicha. And then the roof caved in, because the word spread to Yerushalayim what had taken place, and the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim, I guess as an understatement, were very, very upset with what happened. The Rabbanim of Yerushalayim were led by the Rav Levi Ibn Chaviv. He was the Rav of, I guess, the chief rabbi in the sense of Yerushalayim, the unofficial chief rabbi. He was the Gadol HaDor of Yerushalayim, Marabach, Rav Levi Ibn Chaviv. Him and his contemporaries, his colleagues in Yerushalayim, were very upset about what the Rabbanim of Tzfat had done. They felt that, first of all, who says we pass the Rambam, and the Rambam himself backed out, and they hadn't been consulted, so it wasn't even the Rav Chaim Meretz Yisrael, it was only the Rabbanim of Tzfat who had been on board. The kids of the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim held that the smicha was both from the Hotel. They held that the whole thing was not a valid smicha. They held the whole thing was not true. So this machlokes was raging for quite a few years in Eretz Yisrael, and spread to other places in the world also. One can imagine that, you know, if the Rabbanim of Tzfat would have prevailed, so we could theoretically could have started the Sanhedrin over again. We could have theoretically gone back to Kiddush HaChodesh based on the Eidim. We could have had Dine Knossos. We could have had all kind of new things, and we don't have this Manazah. The Torah Shel Peh would have looked very, very different. Practical Judaism would have looked very, very different if the Rabbanim of Tzfat would have won. But the Maisa they lost. Maisa, history, Paskin, in the direction of the Rabbanim of Yerushalayim, and by the next generation, so the whole thing was affected completely. Nobody even talked about it anymore, that it was done, it was finished, and the Rabbanim of Tzfat Lamaisa had been outvoted by Halacha. So it was a radical innovation that the Rabbanim of Tzfat had tried to pull off, but it worked barely for that generation, and it never continued. So Lamaisa, for all practical purposes, we don't have smicha today, at least the real authentic smicha. So the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu, we're going to have to wait until Eliyahu HaNavi comes back and reinstitutes it. But we do have what we call today smicha. I goes to YU, studies in the smicha program for 4 years, learned a little bit here and there. Echaz Avelos, Echaz Nidah, some Shabbos, and Shoyin, passes some Mechidahs, and it gets smicha. What does that mean? What is the halachic concept that we have today that we call something smicha? What in the world does that mean? So here, this is based on something totally different. This is based on a sugi in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells us, what are some of the qualifications for a person to paskin shailos? Remember, we started out this year, the other day, by saying that there are different areas of psak halacha. There's psak halacha of dinin mamonis, and there's psak halacha of isav heter. And for the psak halacha of isav heter, so you don't have to have really credentials in terms of being a smicha, but you have to know what's going on. You have to be a talmid chacham. So comes the Gemara in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin and tells us that even the Paskin Shilohs of Issa Heter, there are three necessary credentials, three qualifications. A regular Rav, a regular Rabbi, a regular Poisek has to have Adayoy Mazet. Nothing to do with the Smicha of old. Three basic qualifications. So the first qualification the Gemara says is that you have to know the stuff. You have to know the sugyas. You have to know the facts. If you don't know what's, if you don't know, you can Paskin Shilohs of Shabbos, and you don't know what Borer and Bishalah are, so then obviously you can't Paskin Shilohs. Then the Gemara says it's not enough just to be well acquainted with the halachic information, but you have to be acquainted with the reality of the ground. And this is so critical in terms of passing shilas that this is become even more critical in today's day and age, that a rav, in order to pass a shilah correctly, it is not enough just to know what it says in Shulchan Aruch. He has to know what the facts are. Now, in any given area of halacha, the facts are going to be different. The Gemara tells a story about Rav. Before Rav received the permission to pass shilas, he spent in the realm of Bechoros. The Rav became an expert in the realm of what was Bechoros. Bechoros is that area of halacha where an animal, a firstborn animal, gets a blemish, so you're allowed to shecht it. If it doesn't have a blemish, no, shecht all complicated areas of halacha. So the halachas of movement of Bechoros, the Gemara says, you can't pass in a shiloh on until, number one, you know Masechus Bechoros cold, and number two, you have to know animals cold. I mean, you can learn in theory the sugyas of Bechoros in the middle of tomorrow, but you wouldn't know what a broken leg of an animal, you wouldn't know what a pimple on an animal's belly looks like. You wouldn't understand what you're looking at, so you obviously can't pass in the shilohs correctly. So how are you ever going to figure out all these things? How are you going to learn all these metzias? So where do you go? So you don't go to the basement. Where do you go, Basai? In order to get the facts. Or go to the farmers. Go live in a farm. So the Gemara says that Rav spent a year and a half with the Roy Behemadaka, with the shepherds, learning all the ins and outs of the sheep and the goats and the animals and everything. And then only then did he feel comfortable to paskin Shabbos and Mecharis. So this is so critical for any Rav that if you want to paskin Shabbos, especially today when the world is changing, technology, everything changes every 5 minutes. So how are you going to paskin a Shabbos about an oven on Shabbos if you don't understand how an oven works? If you don't understand the basic things, you're going to have to find out that information before you paskin correctly. This is true in this is for sure true. But a person in Rav wants to pass in Shalos, that area of Allah has to be up to date in terms of medicine and fertility and all these kinds of things, which are so relevant, Shalos, Mizman Azel. It's in all areas of Allah. And a Rav has to become proficient in the halachic parts, and he has to become proficient in the Metzias parts as well. There's an interesting one of the Mefarshim of the Yerushalmi wrote a parish in the Yerushalmi a couple hundred years ago. It's Eid Israel. So if anyone ever learns Eid Israel, you'll know that it's all about agriculture. And it's hard. You have to understand planting. You got to understand the harvesting. You got to understand all kind of kunstim with trees and plants and vegetables and fruit, everything. So your average rabbi isn't going to necessarily know all that. So this particular rabbi was writing a paper on the Rishami. And he realized that he didn't know the ABCs of botany and agriculture. So you know what he did? He lived in Berlin. So he signed up for a course in botany in the University of Berlin. This is 300 years ago. So this is before Jews went to university. So you had, I don't remember if it was a play, Moshe or Kerman Eder, one of the two Mefarshim and Mishami. He lived in Berlin and he signed up for a course. Imagine, he's sitting there in the back of the writing papers, taking notes, 80-year-old man with a long white beard. Because that's the thing. If you want to know botany, you got to go to botanists. If you want to know animals, you got to go to the shepherds. So the second condition for passing the shalos properly is being proficient in the mitzvahs. And then the Gemara says that there's a third thing that's necessary. It's not enough that a person can pass in shalos just because he knows the halacha, just because he knows the mitzvahs. He has to know how to speak properly and clearly. Strange. Properly and clearly, what does that mean? So the Gemara tells the following story, that there was a person who, a young Talmid Chacham, he came to town, and he was paskening some kind of a shaila about hilchos challah. And there's some kind of a technical halacha in challah and tumah. Again, the details for an hour and a point. And he meant to say mei beitzim, which means like eggs, like, you know, egg yolks, mei beitzim. But he didn't speak so clearly, and he pronounced it mei bitzayim. Mei bitzayim, when the people heard him say mei bitzayim means water that comes from a marsh. It's water, H2O, but it's like from a muddyish kind of water. It's not regular clean water. So the halacha is that mei beitzim is one kind of halacha, mei bitzayim is something totally, completely different. So the people didn't hear him properly, so they misunderstood what he said. So for years they were doing the wrong thing in the Chassala based on that one mistake. So when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi heard about the story, he got very upset. And he says, you know what? We can't have these young Talmid Chacham going out and passing in shilas until they know how to speak clearly. So how are we going to know whether these young Talmid Chacham know how to speak properly? So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said, we will not let a person pass in shilas unless he has an official Netilas Rishus Rabbi, until his Rebbe grants him permission to pass in shilas. Not every Tom, Dick, and Harry has a right just to learn a sugya, and he'll learn a little bit about the background, the physical background, and then he'll decide for himself if he's going to go run around passing Shas or Klal. So no, he has that permission from his Rebbe to Paskin. And the reason for this permission is necessary is not so much to make sure he knows the stuff, but to make sure that he knows how to express himself clearly. And it shouldn't be a mistake, shouldn't be some kind of a misleading application of the halacha. So these are the three credentials for a Rav Bizman Hazeh, the same as they were in the days of the Gemara. He has to have halachic knowledge, he has to have practical knowledge, and he has to be able to speak clearly. When his Rebbe realizes that he is proficient in all these three areas, then he will grant him permission to Paskin Shailas, and then and only then does he have a right to Paskin Shailas. So the Rama writes in Hilchos Tamat Torah, the Rama writes that Bizman Hazeh, when we grant smicha, what we're really doing is we're giving reshus to our talmidim to paskin. It means that a guy goes to yeshiva and he learns for a couple of years, and the rebbeim in the yeshiva give him bechinas, and they see he knows how to learn, they see he understands the background, the physical background, the materials, and they also got to know him a little bit, they see he speaks clearly, they see he understands what he's saying, he knows how to explain things clearly. So then the rabbanim, his rebbeim, will grant him smicha. So the smicha that we give today is really the halachic petilus reshus that Rabbi Dan Nossi was Masakin in the beginning of Masechet Sanhedrin, Talmud al Yairi Elim Ken Kiba Rabu Rishos. So there is a halachic significance to the smicha that we grant today, but it's very, very different than the smicha of old. It's not the official smicha, Ishri Pisha Mesh Rabbeinu. Having smicha from Wayu doesn't give you permission to sit in the Sanhedrin, to pass in Kiddush HaChodesh, in the Fash of the Niknasas, but it does give you permission to pass in Shalas, in Aruch Chaim, in a day, etc. Again, so that you know what you're talking about. Smicha doesn't give you permission to pass in those areas that you don't know anything about, but if you know what you're talking about, and you know how to express yourself clearly, you know the Mitzvahs. So then, if you have smicha, that gives you permission to pass to the shaila. The Rama writes that we can grant smicha in localized areas of halacha. That it's not necessary for a person to know kol tar kul in order to receive the modern day smicha. So there are more rights that the practice used to be in Europe, that there would be certain people who were experts in the realm of gittin, and they weren't necessarily the biggest of minchav in other areas. It means you wouldn't necessarily bring him a shayla in kashrus, you wouldn't necessarily bring him a shayla neither in Shabbos, but gittin, that was their expertise. So there are more rights, you can give them smicha to hilchos gittin. So that's what we have as well, as also that kind of a concept that you can have a sense, a localized smicha. You can have a smicha for certain areas of halacha, not for other areas of halacha. So the two basic kinds of smichas that we give today, one is called yora yora, and one is called yadin yadin. Anyone have any idea where this comes from? Where the two phrases yora yora and yadin yadin come from? What they mean? Yora means from Yoredeya.
Yadin means Choshimish.
Okay, right. So that's true. But anyone know where the specific phrase Yora Yora and the other is from? So it's from that same Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin. The Gemara tells a story that Rav, before he left Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Rav had studied by Rabbi Dan Nossi, so he wanted to receive smicha. So he asked Rabbi Dan Nossi he didn't want to ask Rabbi Dan Nossi directly. So Rav asked his uncle. Anyone know who Rav's uncle was? Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia was very close to Rabbi Dan Nossi. So Rav asked his uncle to intercede to try to get Rabbi Dan Nossi to give him the right to Paskin Shailas. So he asked him, well, he wants the right to Paskin Shailas in the realm of Yora. So Rabbi Chia asks Rabbi Dan Nossi, Yora, will we permit him to give Horah, like Yoredeya, to answer Kasher Shailas, Shabbos Shailas, Brachah Shailas, etc.? So Rabbi Dan Nossi responded, Yora. So the question was, Yora? So he said, Yora. So then he asked him, Rabbi Chia asked him, Yadin, will you give him permission to pass Kishaz and Chashim Mishpat? So what was the answer? Yadin. So that's where the phrase comes from. Yora, Yora, Yadin, Yadin. It's a joke. It's not a real it's not a real phrase. Nobody ever said Yora, Yora. Nobody ever said Yadin, Yadin. Yora was the question, Yora was the answer. Yadin was the question, Yadin was the answer. But in Yiddish, that colloquially has become known today, is now lingo, as Yora, Yora Smicha or in Yadin, Yadin Smicha. There was a third area of Smicha that Rav wanted from Yudha Nasi. He wanted a specific smicha to be matzeh b'chayrus, because after all he had spent 18 months studying it. So he asked, Rabbi Chia asked Rabbi Danasi, can Rav receive smicha in yatzeh b'chayrus? To which Rabbi Danasi responded, surprisingly, al yatzeh b'chayrus. He would not grant Rav the permission to baskin shalos of b'chayrus. So the Gemara says, why not? Rav was so good, he was so smart, he knew the halachas, he spent a year and a half with the farmers, with the shepherds, why didn't they let him baskin b'chayrus? So the Gemara gives a fascinating answer. The Gemara says that Rav was so sharp in the realm of Bechairis, he was such a world-class expert in the realm of Bechairis, that Rabbi Danasi was afraid that he's going to be mutter certain things that are really mutter, but like the Olam won't even think of mutter. So the people are going to get so confused by his psakim that sometimes you find this, if a guy's a real guy in Olam, a guy's a real azah, Eloi, so he understands the sugya in such a way that Taka comes out in a very, very strange way. He's right. This Eloi is right. She said the right pshat in the sugya, but nobody can chop what he's talking about. So like the Gemara says about Rabbi Meir, the Gemara says that the reason why we don't pass like Rabbi Meir most of the time was not because Rabbi Meir wasn't a big Tamil Chacham. Rabbi Meir was the Gadol Hador. But the Gemara says you can't pass like Rabbi Meir because most of the time people didn't understand him. He was such an Eloish, such a different world, Rabbi Meir, that they couldn't come almost suck him. So anyway, so the Gemara says that Rav and the Rav Bechairis is such a world-class expert that Rabbi Danasi was afraid to grant him smicha. So the poskim write, based on this Gemara, that a Rav has to be very careful that when a Rav paskins a shayla, if he's paskining something that's very mechudosh, that's something really wild, so you have to be careful. You should have to explain to the Balabatim what you're doing. Let's say a Rav comes to town and he says that, okay, you're now allowed to do this and this. And no one understands. They think he's crazy. So that can lead to a big michshel, because then they're going to think that the Rav doesn't know what he's talking about, or the Rav is being too mekel, and so if a person has a psach that's tamul l'rabim, so the poskim write in Shulchan Aruch that if a poskim has something which is a strange psach, he should explain to people why he's telling them this. Otherwise, it's going to be the same problem of why Rabbi Yudanasi didn't want to grant Rav's people. So koponim, we have these limited kinds of smicha, that sometimes a person is a big mumcha in Yoridea, but he's not qualified to do chashim mishpat. So we give smicha l'chatzot. So those places today, like most yeshivas you go to, so those yeshivas that grant smicha, not all yeshivas grant smicha, but those places that grant smicha, so they usually have the Yoridea smicha, and then like yeshiva bayah. So after you finish Yoridea, if you want to go for Yad Yadin, you want to be a dayan, you want to pass for chashim mishpat, then you go for chashim mishpat smicha. Good. So we have a little bit of an understanding in terms of the qualifications of a Rav, the qualifications of the Poisek, who's supposed to be deciding Shalas and Halacha, the people who know the Halacha, the people who know the Metzias, people who know how to express themselves properly. Are there any other qualifications, any other necessary conditions that have to be met before a person is permitted to pass the Shaila? So the Gemara says that in order to pass a shayla, a person has to be a chacham shehigil l'hora. He has to be someone who has reached the age, reached the development of paskening. What does that mean? To be a chacham shehigil l'hora. So the Gemara seems to say that a person should not pass a shayla before they're 40 years old. Still, a person is 40 years old, a person's a little bit immature. A person already reached 40. Some Rishonim say it means 40 years since he started to learn. So that means he could be, he's 50. Okay, even according to the Mekilo, that once he reaches 40, so Ben Aboy, Labina a little bit. Someone said Mishnah, Ben Aboy, Labina. Let's say that. I just made it up. And it says it for Kirov, Ben Aboy, something. So at the age of 40, a person has a little bit of a better understanding. So a person shouldn't pass in Charles at least 40. So the Gemara says, but Rabbah used to pass in Charles, and Rabbah died before he was 40. So how do you explain that? So the Gemara says, there was no one else available. So it means, halacha is not that it's awesome for someone before the age of 40 to pass in Charles. It just means that if you have someone over the age of 40 and someone under the age of 40, and the person over the age of 40 is qualified, so the younger than 40 should defer to the older than 40. There's no one else around. It's not Shech. He's the rabbi in town. He's 25, but he's the rabbi. He's the biggest Tamalachim around. So then he has to pass it even before the age of 40. So a person should be careful that a person has to meet the qualifications and has to be someone who is Yigil L'Hora. Once a person is Yigil L'Hora, once a person is qualified to pass the Shaila, so then there's a tremendous koach that he has in terms of Psach Halacha in the following sense. The Gemara tells a fascinating story in the beginning of the 19th Perek of Masechet Shabbos. The Gemara tells us that there was a machlekes atanoim between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about bris mila on Shabbos. Anyone know the machlekes? Famous machlekes. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about when you have a bris on Shabbos. So meal on the 8th day is Necha Shabbos. So Rabbi Eliezer said not only is the meal itself push off Shabbos, but any preparation that's necessary for the meal also is Necha Shabbos. That's what Rabbi Eliezer says. Let's say you come to the bris Shabbos morning and you realize, I have a knife. Well, does have a knife. So Rabbi Eliezer says, no problem. You can make a knife on Shabbos. How many malachas go into making a knife? So the Gemara says you have to chop down the wood in order to make a fire. Then you have to take metal and melt the metal, and you have to put it on the and put it on the wood, etc. So you have malach of kaitzer and havara and kibui, make the charcoals and the mat of a papish and bayna, 15,000 different malachas. Rabbi Eliezer says it's mutar lechatchila, because just as the Torah says that meal is derech Shabbos, whatever is necessary for the meal is also derech Shabbos. That's why, parenthetically, according to Rabbi Eliezer, let's say a person lives in the middle of Alaska and he's making a bris on Shabbos. So we always know there's a problem that the mohel has got to come for Shabbos. Sometimes the mohel doesn't want to spend Shabbos in Alaska. Well, let's say it's Yom Kippur. Let's say it's 3-day Yom Kippur. It's Yom Kippur. It's Seder or something. It's very hard to find a mohel to come. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, it's no problem. You don't have to find a mohel to come. According to Rabbi Eliezer, what can you do? But the mohel fly Shabbos morning. The mohel, let's say it's 3 days yonder, so it's Thursday, Friday, and Shabbos. The mohel doesn't want to leave his family for 3 days. No problem. Shabbos morning, he'll hop on a plane to Alaska, fly in, got land in the airport, rent a car, he'll drive to the bris, and he'll do the bris. Kodesh Rabbeinu, that's mutar lechatchila, because mila the Shabbos, mila is derech Shabbos. So we paskin like Rabbi Akiva that is an issa deraisa, that's issa skiva for Shabbos. We paskin that only the mila itself is derech Shabbos, but any of the preparation that theoretically could have been done before Shabbos must be done from before Shabbos. So Machlekes Rabbi Eliezer, good, very nice. So we passed in Halacha today against Rabbi Eliezer. If anyone would do like Rabbi Eliezer today, we call Mamash Bechal Shabbos Deraisa. Comes the Gemara and tells an unbelievable story. The Gemara says that once there was a decree against Bris Milah, many times there were decrees by the Romans, other governments, and all the cities in that particular area were affected by the decree, except for the town of Rabbi Eliezer. Why? So the Gemara says that the people in Rabbi Eliezer's town were so most nefesh for the mitzvah of Mila. They used to mamish do malacha on Shabbos to make sure that the bris Mila would take place on time. And that's chus, they were rewarded, and therefore there was no decree against them. Strange Gemara. What's the strange Gemara? You passed me wrong. You passed me Michal Shabbos. You passed me, you're not allowed to do that. So why were they rewarded? What does that mean? So comes with Moshe Feinstein in his introduction to Gris Moshe, and he writes that this Gemara, the Yisoid of Paschal and Shavuos, says with Moshe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of a Rav, expects of a Pesach, to learn through the Sugya, to do his best, to put in all his Mesiras Nefesh to learning the Sugya properly, and whatever conclusion he comes out with, that's how he's Mechuyav to Paschim, Vein Lekula, Vein Lechumra. And if anybody does that, what's expected of him, he will be rewarded. Not only will he be rewarded, but anyone who follows his psak, anyone who lives in his town, or his tamidim, or allowed to follow his psak, even if there are other opinions that disagree, will be rewarded for posketing the shayla correctly. Even though, lamaisa in shemayim, that's not the psak. Lamaisa, the final psak halacha is against Rabbi Eliezer. It doesn't matter. At Kol's Man, there was no official Moshe Beisdin, there was no Sanhedrin, they didn't actually vote to outvote Rabbi Eliezer. Kol's Man, the Rabbi Eliezer Shita was a valid Shita in Halacha, so his Tamidim, the people of his community, were rewarded for following his Pesach. So says Rabbi Moshe, this gives tremendous chizik to a Rav. You know, a Rav tries to pass in a Shail, here Rabbi Moshe writes, I'm about to write a Gris Moshe, I'm going to pass in a Shail for thousands and thousands of people, by based on the truth that I'm going to write. So if the shit, how can you write? How can you pass in a Shail? Who says I'm passing? Right. So says Rav Moshe, a Rav does not have to ask himself, am I paskin like it says in Shemayim? Lo ba Shemayim, I have to paskin as a Lahavdil of Abdullah, like they say about the Empire of Baseball, you call like you see him. If you think it's a strike, so then you have to say it's a strike, and you have to stand by your word that it's a strike. If they show you the instant replay and say it's a ball, okay, then we'll talk about that later. But Kozma, there was no Omdil Aminion, there was no Moshe Bezdin, there was no Sanhedrin that Iska paskin against you, so then you're entitled to paskin, you're required to Paskin, and you're required to stand by your Psach, and your Tamidim, and the people of your Kehillah, of your community, are permitted and obligated to follow your Psachim, and they will be rewarded accordingly. So that's quite a Kayach to a Meir HaRah. But that's only true, says Rabbi Moshe, the person is, number one, Gil HaRah, he's qualified to Paskin, he met all the credentials that we said before, and assuming that he really does his best, that he really tries his hardest, if he's lazy and he says, yeah, sounds like it should be mutter, okay, you know, sounds okay, yeah, the Mishnah Berurah, I think there's Mishnah Berurah somewhere that said it's mutter, okay, he never bothers looking it up, doesn't go back to the Gemara, doesn't learn to the Sugi, just stam, if he takes Psak Halacha flippantly and lightly, so then it's a problem, it's a very serious problem. But if he takes Psak Halacha with the proper Kavod Rosh, like he's supposed to, and he tries his best, so then he would be rewarded, even if not Shemaya Galia, that wasn't really the correct Psak. So we have a little bit of an understanding for what it means to be a Pesach, what it means to be a Rav, what are the credentials to be a Rav. So they want to speak about, for the bulk of the remaining time, an important topic. A corollary of this, it's an important topic, it's a burning topic in contemporary Jewish life, Orthodox contemporary Jewish life today, and that's the issue of what role women have, particularly in many of these things that we've been talking about. So let's get a little bit of a background, first just in terms of the sugya itself, and then see how it plays out Lamaisa today. So as we started yesterday, we mentioned that there are really two fundamentally different types of functionaries in the Jewish community in terms of deciding halacha. There's the dayan and there's the placing. And even within the dayanim, we've further broken down to two different types of dayanim. The dayanim more paskening shailas, and the dayanim more as ma'aseh beis din, more just kind of authoritative, supervising events to beis din, like the darim, chalitza, geiros, things like that, rather than dayanim a poskim with the nefashtin and mamas. What is the halacha in terms of dayanus? To be a dayan, is a woman kasherah to be a dayan or not? What is the halacha? Can a woman serve as a dayan or not? So believe it or not, there's no explicit gemara about this topic. Is a woman kasherah to be a dayan? The makor that is brought to disqualify a woman from being a dayan is a Mishnah Maseches Nida. The Mishnah Maseches Nida is comparing and contrasting the halachas of Eidim and the halachas of Dayanim. Everyone here is learning Makos, so you know that, of course, in order to be an Eid, not every Tom, Dick, and Harry is kosher to be an Eid. A person has to meet certain conditions to be kosher to be an Eid. What are some things that could disqualify a person from being an Eid?
A liar.
Well, if he's a Rasha, right? If he's a Rasha, let's say a guy is, what constitutes a Rasha in Chassidus, by the way? How do we define a Rasha in Chassidus? Atash is Yochem Rasha Yochem Chavas. So the Rambam writes a Rasha can be defined in one of two ways. Either a person does an Aveira that the Torah calls him a Rasha for, such as a person's time is Beis Din, so he has Mechal Shabbos, a guy's a Ritzeach, so the Torah says, Lo Sikhu Kofla Nefesh Ritzeach Shem Rasha Alamach, so this is the last week's Pasha, Pasha's Maaseh. So someone who's Chayav Mises is called a Rasha, or even someone who's Chayav Malkus is called a Rasha. Who remembers? Perchavei and Dvarim. Vahaya Im Bin Hakos HaRasha. So a person who's Chayav Malkus is by definition called a Rasha. So the Rambam says, a guy eats chazer, he's a Rasha, a guy wears Shabbos, he's a Rasha, a guy Mechal Shabbos, a Rasha, a guy is a bit of a Nazar, a Ritzeh, etc. He's called a Rasha. I'm not saying we should run around calling everybody Rishayim, but he's called halakhically a Rasha, and therefore he would not be acceptable to be an Eid. Then the Rambam says there's a second category of Eid of Psulim, a different type of a Rasha, and that's what's called like an Eid Chamas. And Eid Chamas means, what does Chamas mean? Chamas means taking money, it's not a title to Kimala Arts Chamas by the marble, right? But Kimala Arts Chamas means like Gezeila, means taking things that's not yours. So comes the Rambam and says, if a person sins in the realm of monetary law, Dini Mamanis, either he steals somebody's money as a ganav or a gazlan or whatever it is, he gets somebody else's money that he's not entitled to. So that's what's called Eid Chamas. And of course, he is also possibly Eid, even though he's not Chayav Misa, not Chayav Malchus. He's not Chayav Malchus for Gezeila, why not? Why not Chayav Malchus for Gezeila? The Torah says you're supposed to pay back the gazela. The only time you have malchus is if you do an aver that can't be repaired. But if you do an aver that can be repaired through a mitzvah, so there's a special law, there's no malchus. So even though you're not going to have nisa for gazela, you're not going to have malchus for gazela, it doesn't matter. Since you did an aver in the realm of money, you took somebody else's money, that's for sure possibly eidos. So all those kinds of people are psulim eidos. What are other things that could disqualify a person from being an eid? Car, a person's a relative, a very, very close relative, dependent, father, son, brother, first cousin, whatever the details of Korva. So the concept of Korva apostle, Korva and Rishayim, Absum Eidos. So comes the Mishnah Maseches Nida and says, anybody who is apostle to Eidos is Kavachom, apostle to Dayanos. Madach, you can't be an Eid on a case, Kavachom, you can't be a Dayan on a case. So therefore, a Rosh is possible to be a Dayan, therefore, a relative, a Karav, is possible to be a Dayan as well. So that's the claw of the Mishnah, that anyone who's possible to Eidos is possible to Dayanos. The Gemara, the Mishnah says that the reverse is not necessarily true. It could be there are people who are kosher to be Eidim, who are possible to be Dayanim. Again, we're not interested in that right now. But anyone who's possible to be an Eid is possible to be a Dayan. That's what the Mishnah says. Now, is a woman kshayrit to be an Eid or not? They went, can a woman come to Beis Din and testify? So generally speaking, a woman is psula to be an Eid. How do you know a woman is psula to be an Eid? Anyone know? Come on, the fourth parak of Shavuos.
Why would she be?
Why would she be? That's what we're asking. Why is she psula? What's the moment she's psula? The Pasuk in Chumash Vashi Shoftim, the Amdu Shnei Ha'anoshim ha'shalahem ha'rim v'vei Hashem. She says the Gemara in the beginning of the fourth parak of Shavuos, the first sugi there, anoshim v'lo noshim. We have a kach nimra, toshim ha'peh, alach v'lashim v'sinai, that anoshim v'lo noshim, women are psulos to be eidim mid'araisa. Let's say, for example, the mekadosh is a ish in front of two women, so there's nothing, not a condition, zero, it's nothing. So l'chora, if we put two and two together, if we know that a woman is psula midaraisa be an eid, that's nobody argues with that. And we know the Mishnah Nida tells us that anyone who's possible to be an eid is possible to be a dayan, so just connect the dots, what I say. So then a woman l'chora is psula to be a dayan. So you don't need a Gemara to say explicitly that women are psulas to be dayan. And we know that psulas to be dayan. Madacham b'chaymer, the psulas to be an eid. Anyone who's possible to be an eid is possible to be a dayan. Sounds good, right? Sounds like a good Kabachomer, right? It's Mishnah neither good. That's what 99.99% of the Rishonim said. Exactly what I just said. That's what Taisus writes in most places. That's what the Rambam holds, Shulchan Aruch holds, and everybody holds. Except there's one day in Taisus that disagrees. Taisus in the Bakamad of Tezvav quotes such an opinion. It says no. But guess what? That Mishnah in Nida that says called Apostle Lodun. It's only referring to men who are psulim to be eidim. It means if a man is possible because of Zakharov or he's a Rasha, then he's possible to be a dayan. But it is conceivable that you can have a type of a person, i.e. namely a woman, who is psula to be an eid, yet kshera to be a dayan. It's not crazy. It's not totally, completely inconceivable. That's what Taisus suggests as a possibility. What prompted Taisus to say such a strange thing? I mean, the Mishnah doesn't sound like it's distinguishing between men and women. It sounds like it's an eye-cleared rule that whoever's possible to aid is possibly a dayan. What led Taisus to believe such a strange pshar, a strange shita? Anyone know? What prompted the Balei Taisus to search and to say, hey, wait a second, maybe a woman is kshera to be a dayan? Anyone know what prompted Taisus to say that? Anyone learn that from Bavi? Zvora. Taisus says, what do you mean a woman's psula to be a dayan? It's chapas yisavi. We learned in the fourth grade, Dvora isha neviya ish lapidos ishoftes shabayzei. She was a shofetes. What's a shofetes? It's not a dayanis, it's a dayan. So it says beferish that she and Dvora was shofetes. She was a dayan. So what are you telling me a story of Mishnah Nida? It's chapas yisavi. So Taisus said, you have to reinterpret the Mishnah Nida and women are ksheiros to be dayan. Unbelievable shit in Taisus. Amazing day in Taisus. What does everybody else say? All the other days in the Rishonim, all the other days in Taisus, the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, all say that a woman is psula midaraisa to be a dayan, kavacham if she's psula to be an eid. What do they do with the pasuk about Devorah? Any ideas? Do you think that's a good raya, the pasuk in Devorah? The pasuk in Sefer Shoftim. What? Maybe, I mean, usually Shoftim, Shoftim, usually Shoftim, Shoftim, usually we use the terms interchangeably. So, what could the pasuk possibly mean? Have the Devorah been an exception to the rule? Oh, so what do you mean by there's no one else in that? So therefore what? But she was the most qualified. So therefore, but she's psula, she's psula. You're on the right track. What would you say about the following? Let's say, I have a din Torah with you. I say you owe me $1,000. And you say, no, I don't. I don't want to take you to a Beis Din. And I say to you like this, you know, I know a very, very honest person who really would be a wonderful dayan in this case. To find him, he's very honest. My father. I want my father to be one of the dayan. So what do you say? What? Your father, he's an apostle. No. You say to you like this, you know what? I know your father. I trust him. I think it's a great idea. What's the halacha?
Can't
or?
Isn't that a tosas above mitzvah?
What's the din?
You can't have
You can't have him as a dying unless.
Not
unless.
Unless the other guy's father is also dying.
Unless both probably did him, decide they agree to it. That's what's called Nemana Layava. It's a mission said, Nemana Layava, Nemana Laybicha. If I'm willing to go along with it, so then we can do whatever we want. It's moments, we can play whatever games we want. So the halacha is that I can't force you to have my father sit in the Vintara, but my father's possible to sit in there because it's a Karov. I can't bring an aid against you if you don't accept it as a relative. If you say, listen, I trust the guy, I'm willing to let him sit in the din Torah. So then it's called kibbul alayim. Both probably didn't accept someone who's possible. So do whatever they want. Comes Tyson and says, that's what happened with Devorah. That no chidami. A woman cannot be a dayanist. She can't be a dayan unless what? unless she's accepted by all the Bali Dinim. So comes Tyson and says, probably for the reason that you said, she was the most qualified person for the job. She knew what she had to do. She knew how to learn better than any other people. So she was the most qualified. So therefore, kibbu alai. That's what Tyson says in one day. Interesting what Tyson says. The idea is what Tyson says. And maybe we misunderstood what shofetus means. Shofetus doesn't mean she actually decided the cases. You know what shofetus means? She was behind the scenes. If there were three dayanim, three men sitting on the case, but when they didn't know what to do, who'd they call? They call the Dvorah. Very often, sometimes you call a rabbi with a shayla. So the rabbi says, I've got to get back to you. So sometimes it means the rabbi looks it up himself. Sometimes, what does it mean?
Well,
somebody else, right? So there used to be a joke that years ago they used to say that when you give smicha to somebody, so it doesn't matter what's on the front of the smicha, that's not important. What's important is what's on the back of the smicha. Namely, just make sure to give the Rav Moshe Feinstein's telephone number. So that's what Tosfos says here also. That Devorah was melamedes lam adinim. She was teaching the dayanim what the halacha was. She was telling them the ktsaisis and the nesivis and the shechonavs and the ramahs and the rams and the rabbis. She was explaining to them what to do, but in terms of formally sitting on the beis din, a woman cannot sit on the beis din. That's what Taisus writes. So again, so the machlekes are rishonim. So some of the rishonim write that, most of the rishonim write that a woman is not acceptable to be a dayan. They see themselves in the Mishnah Masechet Dinah, the simple reading of the Mishnah. The dvorah problem. So they kvetch with the dvorah, this and that, they kvetch here and they kvetch there, etc. To explain away why dvorah was different. They were kibbu alai, or melamedes lam adinim, etc. So possible. Okay? That's the basic mahalach. But there's one day it tucked away in that Taisus Bava Kama that says, in the chinami, a woman could not be a dayan. There is a radical sheet in the Rishonim. Again, it's not mainstream in the Rishonim. There's a radical sheet in the Rishonim that applies this idea of woman being a dayan in the following case. I think we mentioned that a geirus requires a beis din. We mentioned this? Right? We mentioned this yesterday, right? That geirus requires a beis din. So the Gemara tells a story of Sefer Yevamos. There was a certain woman who converted, and there was a question about her geirus. There was some problem about the geirus. And they didn't realize right away there was a problem, and then she married somebody, and she was a religious woman, she was observing all the mitzvahs. And 20 years later, they came up with some kind of a question about the geirus. So Rav Ashi Paskin at the time, he said, don't worry about it, the geirus is okay. You know why? Because even if the original tevila that she did 20 years ago was no good, there's a frum woman, so she goes to the mikveh every month for tevilas nida. So mila tovla nidusa. The going to the mikveh for tevilas nida can count as a tevil mishem geirus. That's what the Gemara says. So even though the original tefillah was problematic, but the subsequent tefillah that you went to Torah's Nida would be okay. That's the chiddush of the Gemara of Ash. Good, very nice. What's the problem? The Gemara said, there's no what? There's no basin. There's the basin. The woman goes to the mikvah for Torah's Mishpach, for Chos Nida, there's no basin sitting there. So where's the basin? What do you mean the tefillah is good? Where's the basin? So different Rishonim give different answers to this question. So there's one day in Rishonim that the Mordechai quotes an unbelievable answer. The Mordechai says, you know the Beis Din is? Who do you think the Beis Din is? When she goes to the mikvah? The other woman there. The other women are there. That's the Beis Din. Either women. Women can't be a Beis Din. Says one day in the Mordechai, yeah. He says women can't be a Beis Din. Shafedas, she can't be a Beis Din. Again, it's not mainstream halacha. Halacha lemaisa, we don't pass it like that day in the Mordechai. We don't pass it like that day in places. In Shulchan Aruch, it's not even quoted as the Yesh Omrim. It's not even presented as an alternate opinion. There is no question whatsoever, halacha lemaisa, we pass it, that a woman cannot be a dayan. Finished as a discussion. A woman cannot sit in the dinner. However, just because a woman cannot sit on a din Torah, it doesn't necessarily translate to mean that a woman can't pass in a shiloh. Because remember from yesterday's shir, the opening shir we mentioned yesterday is that there are two different types of rabbanim, so to speak. There are dayanim, and then there are poskim in terms of issur v'heter. And in order to be a dayan, so a minatari, you have to have smicha, and you have to can't be a korov, etc. In order to be a rav, you don't need smicha. An authentic smicha to be a rav to answer shaila in Hilchos Shabbos. Let's say a relative. Can I call my father with a shaila? My father knows how to pass in shalas. I'm not asking the shaila. Kids ask me questions. I'm not passing shalas for your kids. I'm not passing shalas for your brothers. I'm not passing shalas for your cousins. It's only when you're a dayan you can't serve as a dayan for a relative. So the halacha is that just as we're saying there are differences between Dayanim and Rabbanim. So maybe we could argue that true, a woman can't serve as a Dayan on a Cheshev Mishpat case, on a Dini Mamonis case, but who says that a woman can't answer a Cheshev Mishpat? Someone calls the Rebbetzin. The Rebbetzin knows the answer. They say, Rebbetzin, am I allowed to put the children back on the fire and Shabbos? So if she has to ask her husband to pass the Shiloh, or if she really knows the answer, she can answer herself. So the Pesach Tshuva Yerodea writes that it would appear that she can answer the question herself. That if the woman, assuming that she has all the conditions, means she knows how to learn, she knows the facts, she knows how to talk, she knows how to answer things properly, so then theoretically she would be permitted to answer the Shiloh in terms of Isavahatta. Answering Isavahatta in and of itself wouldn't be a problem. So there's a raya from one of the Rishonim that this is true. That raya is from the Sefer Achinuch. The Sefer Achinuch writes that the Gemara tells us, we'll talk about this later on, that when a Rav passes a Shaila, the Rav is not allowed to be drunk. If a Rav is drunk, he can't pass in the Shaila. So the Sefer Achinuch writes that just as a man is not allowed to be drunk when he passes the Shaila, a woman's not allowed to be drunk when she passes the Shaila. Who's passing the Shilas? But the Rebbetzin of Sefer Chinuch is answering Shilas. Who's passing the Shilas? So the answer is the Sefer Chinuch held that there's nothing intrinsically wrong with a woman answering the Shilas. So in terms of pure halacha, so a woman cannot be a dayan, but in terms of pure halacha, she would be able to answer a Shilas. However, now becomes very, very important. This is something that it's very, very, one has to be very, very careful about. Sometimes you have a situation in halacha which is technically okay, and yet the application of this particular halacha can sometimes set off all kind of movements and all kind of repercussions. And sometimes the people who are asking the question, sometimes they're not pointing fingers at anybody right now in this particular case, but sometimes the motives are not perhaps what they should be, and then we have to be very, very careful in terms of dealing with these kinds of shots. I'll give you an example. Mama should have said. There is a halacha that mezuman, women benching mezuman, the whole sugya of the year, the seventh parak of brachas. So it's bottom line, it's machlokes and rishon, machlokes and poskim halacha. Either women are chayavos to bench bezimun, say you have three women a week together. So many poskim say they're chayavos to bench bezimun, and other poskim say they're allowed to bench. It's a rishus and they want to, but they're not chayavos. Nobody says it's also to bench bezimun. The machlokes in the gemara, the rishon, and the shulchan aruch is it a chi of gomer like three men, or is it just a rishus? So the minhag Yisrael is that it's rishus. We assume it's only rishus. For women generally for hundreds of years have not been doing it. Let's say women want to bench mezuzah. Is there anything intrinsically wrong with that? Fakir, now there's nothing wrong with it. Intrinsically, it's a great thing. But what do you have to ask yourself now? Is where is it coming from? Why do the women want to bench mezuzah? So is it because, you know, that women want machber and all the other halachas and everything, the mamish machber, all the din and shulchan aruch, and they really want to be yaitzeh, those shittas who say benching mezuzah is a chiyuv? If that's their motivation, call a couple. However, if the motivation is not stemming from that, if the motivation, and again, I'm not pointing any fingers, I'm not saying anyone is or not, I'm just saying that if the motivation is not coming from that, but rather the motivation is coming from, we want to be able to do what men are able to do, equal rights, and better, you know, women's, whatever. If that's the motivation, and we're going to show that we can do, we're just as good as men. So, the halacha is not here for a show. The halacha is not here to make political statements with. So then one has to be very, very careful as to whether that would be an appropriate venue of having women, encouraging women to bench mezuzahs. So again, you can have an activity which itself, in and of itself, is not negative. In and of itself, it's either positive or neutral. It's either b'shus or chiyuv. But in terms of if the background, the context of what's being done, is being done for reasons which are not in the spirit of the halachic system, then we have to be very, very, very careful in terms of dealing with these kinds of situations. Yeah, there's many, many other kinds of setups like this. So perhaps this idea of women in passing shilas falls into a similar kind of category. 100 years ago in Europe, if somebody came to the Rebbetzin and asked the Rebbetzin, am I allowed to put the food back in the fire and chop something? If the Rebbetzin knew the answer, so she would give the answer and finish. Like the Pesach Tshuva writes, the Sefer Chinuch writes, and a woman can pass the Shalas of Eta. There was nothing wrong, it wasn't out of the ordinary. But the question is, in today's world, when a woman wants to quote unquote pass the Shalas, so what does that mean exactly, what's the pass the Shalas? Does that mean that she's looking to, quote unquote, take on the role of a rabbi? She wants to become a rabbi, she's going to going to show that a woman could also be a Rav, and a woman could also be a Postik, and maybe a woman could also be a Dayanus, and whatever the case may be. Is it part of an agenda? And again, I'm not pointing fingers at any particular person, any particular organizations, but, you know, Klaus must be very, very careful with agendas. If there's a hidden agenda, sometimes it's not so hidden, if there's an agenda attached to what a person is trying to accomplish, even if the particular statement may be in sync, halachically, so we have to be very, very careful with that. So this is something that becomes very controversial today. You know, sometimes you have situations where, particularly in women's issues, which are a very sensitive issue in the Orthodox world, particularly in the non-Orthodox world, you know, the world that most of us are in now, that women's issues are very, very sensitive issues. So sometimes, you know, the Rabbanim of each generation have to size up to the best of their ability as to not only what the pure halach is. It doesn't even matter, like, is this mutter? Also, it's more than that. That it can be mutter, but it's trying, that what it's trying to accomplish, like the agenda, is something which is not in the spirit of the Torah and the halachic process. So we have to be very, very careful with that. So the answer to the question, can a woman pass in a shayla? The answer is, api halacha, yes. Lamaisa, does that mean we should encourage women to be passing shaylos today? That's a very, very different question. There's a very, very big difference between the official psach that a woman can pass in a shayla and saying, therefore, we can open up the door for women to become passing shaylos. So that's a very, very different ballgame. So this is important in all areas of halacha to realize that you have to look beyond just the superficial, be able to understand how to apply the halacha properly in each and every generation. Okay, we'll stop this.
Thank you.